This is an interview with Mrs. Norma Paulus, past state representative to the Oregon Legislature, conducted by Mrs. Cami Tarahumara, Community and Regional Planning Master's student at the University of Oregon, at Mrs. Paulus' office in Salem, Oregon, on June 4th, 1997.
I got out of law school with Chief Justice, who I just saw again now, Wally Carson, had graduated with, we had graduated from law school together. He came to me after our graduation and said he wanted to run for the House, and would I help him do that? My husband had kind of grown up with him.
Yeah.
And so we decided that, he would be an excellent legislator, which he was, and that's how I got involved in local politics. And the Republicans were a very moderate, progressive group at that time, and they were leading a lot of these issues. So, and I became very involved in the environmental issues and campaigned on them when I first ran in 1970. I was elected in 1970. My first session was 71.
Sorry.
I know, I'm sorry. Karen, two things. When I'm finished, you have to write a letter to Strobe Beck to send over. You might have to.
This is great. This going to the background of how you became involved.
At any rate, I campaigned on recycling and land use and environmental issues. And then we, of course, were very concerned about protecting the farmland in the Willamette Valley for this impending horde of people that was coming in, which came in 20 years later.
Is that state Supreme Court?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So when I got into the legislature in 1971, I was placed on the Judiciary Committee because I was one of a very few, I mean, there were very few lawyers. So I was placed on Judiciary, which was kind of the workhorse, and then on the Natural Resources Committee. It wasn't called Environment in the 71 session, and I became very involved in the trying to build the Forest Practices Act and reclamation of land and things like that. So then in the interim, I had a lot of environmental groups. After my first session, I was given a very high rating by the environmental groups. So more and more of those interests or those kinds of bills and issues came to me. And then I got involved with Hector McPherson and other members of the farming community, who had been working on Senate Bill 10 with the governor, and the ultra-conservatives were very concerned about Senate Bill 10 because they thought it was part of an international conspiracy to create a new world order, which we heard that now. Now we're hearing it about schools. But, very paranoid about what Senate Bill 10 did as far as governmental structure. Also at that time, we were helping start the metro system in Portland, trying to build these regional planning commissions and the boundary commissions. And prior to my going into the legislature, because of my environmental involvement, Governor McCaulay appointed me to the first boundary commission, which was Marion Pope Boundary Commission. And as a matter of fact, Ed Stillings, who is also a member of the boundary commission and was a professor at Willamette, a political science professor, he and I were the first people, I think, in the United States to really coin the phrase urban growth boundary. And I know that we were the first group to actually impose one by law under the Urban Growth Boundary Commission, under the Marion Pope Boundary Commission. And the first speech I gave was to the Downtown Salem Rotary. First political speech I gave was before I was elected as a member of the as a member of the legislature, and I served on this board, I went before the Downtown Rotary Club and spoke about this new urban growth boundary, and instantly the builders talked about Norma's iron ring around the city. So I've had a long history in land use and trying to provide wise stewardship for land use, and it's now more important than ever, of course, because the growth pressures are so tremendous. But getting back to that, I work closely with Hector McPherson and the Women for Agriculture, the Oregon Farm Bureau, and other farm interests to try to come up with a way to create a comprehensive land use plan. And, the political turmoil over it, of course, was tremendous, and the resistance to it was great. And it took several years to do it. And one of the key people that unfortunately is no longer with us is L.B. Day, because he played the most major role, in my opinion, in getting it passed. His involvement in it at the later stages was very critical to its passage. And I enjoyed working with him on a lot of issues. But my goodness, it was really a hard-fought issue. Now, have you heard the story about the House Committee on Land Use and Environment?
Just that Ted Hall had come in and said that they should not change a thing what had passed through the Senate Committee, the Senate Environment Committee. They had completed the bill the way that the final draft, and they had passed it.
Well, that's when L.B. Day had brokered all the changes, and it was L.B. Day that played the major role in putting together the final version. Well, no, what I was talking about is that we had the Land Use and Environment Committee, and it was chaired by Nancy Fadley, and it was dominated by women. It was the first committee to have a majority of women serve on the committee, and that was because we had a lot of feminist bills, and the Democratic and Republican women, I'd gone to Betty Roberts, who was the dean of the women in the legislature and in the Senate, and asked her to help me form a women's political caucus so that if the Republican women and Democratic women in both houses held together on all the women's issues, we'd be able to make great headway. Because the pressure was building and on the outside for changes in statutes that discriminated against women in credit, accommodations, and athletics, and education, and property ownership, insurance, a whole bunch of things. So we were working with Women for Agriculture. They were very involved in changing the inheritance laws that discriminated against farming women. AAUW, ZONTA, Business and Professional Women, the Women in Communications, all kinds of women groups outside. And we knew that if we could get the bills to the floor that they would pass because of the public pressure. But our problem under Oregon's system of running the legislature was to get it out of a committee. And most of the committees were dominated by men. So we went to the speaker, who was a feminist at the time, and told him that we had all these feminist bills that we wanted to pass, but we had to find a friendly committee. And he said, well, let me think about it. And he came back a few days later and said he was creating the Land Use and Environment Committee, and he was going to make Nancy Fadley, a Democrat, because the Democrats controlled, the chairman of it, and then he put five women, so all we had to do was to make certain we were all five there at the same time, and we could shoot these feminist bills through the Land Use and Environment Committee. Mm-hmm. And that's why we did a lot of things, but one of them was that we changed the law that session so that if it was against the law to sell sex, it was going to be against the law to buy it. Mm-hmm. And that everybody that researches that prostitution bill wonders why it came out of Land Use and Environment. And the reason it did is because that's where we women were to dominate the committee process. Well, that's where the Senate Bill 100 came to our committee. And it was a grand, grand occasion when we finally got it through. At the same time, we were trying to protect the Willamette Greenway, and Governor Straub wanted to condemn all the land up and down the Willamette Valley along the river. And my bill actually passed. The current Greenway bill was my bill, and I used an easement theory rather than condemnation theory, which was much more palatable to the farmers. And I argued that it made more sense to keep the farmers farming and have the farmers profitable, so that if farming is profitable, you'll have less development. So I was, for a long, long period, was very involved in that issue. Still am.
When did the need for land use reform first come to your attention?
Well, after I got out of law school and became involved in public issues, and we were then, the forecast was that Oregon was such a Shangri-La that we would have this tremendous influx of people. Hmm. And it was projected to hit at the end of the 80s and the end of the 70s. Well, then our economy went through hell in the handbasket because the timber industry took a nosedive, and we went through this period when we actually lost people, and rather than have people came in because there were no jobs here. And now that the economy is booming, we have this tremendous growth cycle, so it's 15 years later, 20 years later than we anticipated, but that's what really drove us to pass it in 73. And it was the first comprehensive land use plan to be passed in the United States.
I started
my political career by campaigning on recycling, which was part of the bottle bill. Mm-hmm.
So you were involved in the recycling.
I introduced all the major recycling legislation. Mm-hmm. And I chaired the first commission on solid waste.
Who influenced your idea of land use reform? Was there anyone in particular who you would listen to?
Well, a lot of people, what really started it, what gave it credibility was the farming community wanted it. And the farming community was the very prominent, very powerful. And then the ranching community supported the more urbanite farmers over here.
Mm-hmm.
Were there but just the clean air, clean, wise use of the land.
Mm-hmm. Were there any documents that you had read that also maybe influenced?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were a lot of books written at the time about it. I still have most of them at home. So, yes, a lot was being written about it at the time. Air pollution, water pollution, transportation. We've supported every mass transit proposal mm-hmm. put forth by anyone. Mm-hmm. All the livability issues. And the issues are the same.
Mm-hmm.
The people are different. But the issues are pretty much the same.
How are the people different?
Well, number one, we have more of them. And we have more people that have don't have roots in Oregon, so there's less, there are fewer people like yourself with a sense of history and heritage. Sometimes, though, the younger people that move here and still find it pristine by their other standards are zealous in their pursuit, but if people travel this state like I do and could see the dramatic changes, the transportation problems all over the state, and see that we have not been investing in our infrastructure, in schools and transportation and water systems, and, you know,
have to definitely deal with those soon. Were there any constituencies as you were going through all of these processes for environmental reform and land use reform who maybe surprised you with their support for land use reform?
Well, at the time we were doing this, the Oregon Environmental Council was a very powerful organization, and it was because average Oregonians joined it, and it was a very popular thing to be involved with. And it was a very strong push for an environmental posture for the state. So the average Oregonian, I think, was very involved in it. And they were inspired by Tom McCall's leadership. But it was a very exciting time.
Sometimes I wish I could
have
been there.
It was a very exciting thing to be so involved in. A very rewarding part of the political process.
That's wonderful. What values or ideas did you believe needed to be contained within Senate Bill 100?
Well, number one, that if we would protect the farmland, it would enhance the livability, because the more the Willamette Valley has the most fertile land in the world, and Lake Labiche is probably the most fertile land in the world for growing things. And I'd always maintained that Oregon should do what it did best, which was grow things, and that included trees. So I've been very involved in the forestry issues all my political career too. But the wise use of the land, coupled with a transportation system that embodied mass transit and clean air standards and water, clean water, entire package. And we have much to do on every one of those fronts.
Do you see anybody taking a leadership with those at the moment?
Well, Governor Kitzhaber has certainly been a stalwart supporter of most of those issues. Mm-hmm. So that's good. But the environmental climate has not been there. The pressure from the public has not been there, but it's growing again now. Mm-hmm. In 1973, we had greeting cards. The ungreeting cards, have you ever heard of them?
Uh-oh.
Oh, well, you should investigate that. James Cloutier had a business of selling greeting cards that were ungreeting cards. For instance, one of them would say, Oregonians don't tan, they rust, and all of these things. He chanted the rain to keep people out. We had Don't Californicate Oregon bumper stickers. Mm-hmm. We used to make rude jokes about Californians. We were viewed as very inhospitable. It kind of gave Oregon a mystique. Mm-hmm. And it worked in reverse, because more people were drawn to it. A lot of good fun, a lot of talent, a lot of wit.
Real characters, that's how I see some of those people. Mm-hmm. Do you think that any of your values or ideas for land use reform have changed over the years? Or
no. No. There's a more urgency now than ever before.
Mm-hmm. Does the current land use system meet what your original intentions were as you were coming up with policy?
Well, the system is only as good as the people who administer it, or are elected to administer it. And when the economy took a nosedive, and we became an impoverished state, an economy that is suffering breeds and fosters a more conservative attitude on part of people. And with that comes a decline in environmental protection. certainly at the legislature, we're still seeing that.
So do you think that it has met your intentions in some way, or?
Well, it has, but it's endangered.
Do you think that
more and more people will give in on the urban growth boundaries, and more people will be willing to give in on the basic precepts?
They feel pressured in some way. Do you think that any of the original intentions for land use reform have been improved with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, things that they've informed?
And LUBA, that
Well,
I don't know. I've been so busy with the school business that I haven't kept up on the court cases, the administrative rules, so I don't know that damage has been done, but I can see it that on that we are not doing a good enough job of protecting our wetlands. I can see that here in the city of Salem. The agencies that are charged with looking after the environment have been attacked and underfunded by conservative causes. Mm-hmm. So that has affected air pollution, water purity, and land use. So I think that there's been a diminishment of it to some degree.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that any of your ideas maybe have been lost entirely as the land use has matured? I know that you said that you came up with or worked on the idea of the urban growth boundary. Mm-hmm. And has that been pretty consistent, those original frameworks of that?
Yes, because the original space allotted was considerable, but now there's pressure because of this tremendous, unprecedented growth. Mm-hmm. There's pressure all over to expand it in Bend and Salem and Portland and the Valley.
Citizen participation is a large component of Oregon's land use system. Do you feel that the goal continues to work the way it was intended, and that it is still practical for local governments to implement?
Well, we have such a strong history in Oregon of local control that I think that that has to be a part of it. Citizen participation is not as great as it once was. And that has a lot to do with the economy, advanced technology, and the fact that we are more of a peripatetic, more of a commuting society, so that there's so many people that live in South Salem but work in Portland, because they can get a bigger house and a bigger backyard for their children in Salem for less money, a nicer house and a bigger one. So there are many people that actually live in Salem that used to be just in Kaiser, which is in the north part. Now it's even in the south part. So if you left at 6:30 in the morning, you follow a whole lot of people from Salem to Portland, where they actually work. Or those people that are holding down one or two jobs in a family. Most people that have families, now everybody's working in some capacity, they have fewer hours to participate in governmental affairs or civic affairs, and I see the effect of that in many ways.
And what sort of balance between state and local control over land use planning did you anticipate?
I think what we were trying to do is to set a very broad general plan at the state level. A vision and then a framework, and allow each county to come up with its own version inside that bigger framework. And that's important. That's an important concept in governance of this state, regardless of whether you're talking about schools or land use or transportation or health plans or water, because this is the most diverse state in the nation. And we have three mountain ranges and this fertile valley and then the high desert country and mountains and rivers, and we have concentrated urban areas and then communities that are very sparse and sprinkled around. So one size does not fit all in Oregon, and you have to, whatever you do at the state, has to allow for a lot of local innovation and control.
How would you rate the current land use system? I know that you said that you haven't been watching it too closely since your interest has been contained in education. But on a scale of like 1 to 10, how would you rate it as being effective?
Well, if you're comparing it nationwide, I think we would be right up there at the top. But once again, with this unprecedented growth, it's going to depend on the elected leaders at the local level and state level. And one of the things I worry about now in this legislative session is not only the more conservative elements are anti-environmental stances anyway, so that they underfund the protection thereof or the study thereof. That's a real problem, and that will be a weakening factor. The other thing about it at the state level is term limits has had a kind of a debilitating effect on major systems because there's no institutional memory of why we have a certain plan. So I think that we are at a precarious turn here.
How would you rate the system for meeting what you had envisioned? Has it fit what you
intended? Well, one of the things that in 1973, when I used to drive to Portland not nearly as often as I do now, which is about 7 or 8 times a week, but I remember one day when I was on the freeway with a fellow legislator, and he said, well, in 20 years this will be a solid development. And I thought, oh, that can't be, but of course it almost is. And the smaller towns along the freeway expanded, made their urban growth boundaries as large as they could then to accommodate businesses. And, so I see some deterioration in the overall concept.
I don't want to force you to have to choose a number between 1 and 10 to do this. Think that you would be able to just like give it a rating for being able to how it fits what you had envisioned?
Well, it's still the best that the nation has, but the next 10 years will tell us whether or not it really works. And it's all going to depend on the people making the local decisions primarily.
What were the strengths of the land use reform effort in Oregon?
The greatest strength was that it came, it literally did come from the people, from a participatory, I've always used to joke that in Oregon, that it was just part of your life. I mean, it was part of your passport, it was part of your birthright, that you had to go up to at least 3 public meetings every week, or I mean, you were part of the process. But that participation, as I said, is diminishing, and I worry about that because of the frenetic lifestyle we have, the fact that we are commuters, the fact that almost everybody is working, the fact that our poverty rate has risen, we have more low-income people that are holding families and jobs together, so that allows less participation.
Do you see any weaknesses in that whole reform process that you would like to go back to and say, I wish I could have done this differently? Or?
Not really.
Is there anything else you would like to share that you just would like to be able to share with everybody about your involvement or what you saw?
Well, I'm certainly proud of my involvement and very satisfied by it politically, because it was not only very exciting, but as I said, a very rewarding thing to be at the top of an effort to bring all these people together. And it was a very exciting thing. It was extremely difficult, but then to pass into law very good things and lasting things, it was always difficult.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
May I keep this, or is that the only one you
have?
No,
you can keep that, actually. I have it on my computer, so.
hundreds, literally hundreds and hundreds of hours of meetings with people.
All over Oregon?
Mm-hmm. And there were, Senator Halleck's contribution was in a committee where people came to the committee hearing. But to get to the point where you could actually formulate a bill and get the public pressure was really an exhausting thing because of just the countless, countless meetings. And Hector McPherson, I'm sure, must have made a point of that. Because to get it to the point where you were actually going to come into a committee is...
I think that that's what, what has amazed me the most, is the enormous effort that was taken to educate the people.
And involve them. Just hour after hour after hour, night after night, month after month.
Do you ever just feel exhausted?
Well, you know, that's part of what you're supposed to do as a legislator.
A lot of energy there.
That's right.